Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 13, and I'm your host, Nick Ortigo. Talking about the events in Charlottesville can be challenging. We have some resources that can help. Plus, mastery learning is now filtering into schools in New York. Is this style of teaching here to stay or just a fad? And teachers and schools struggled to figure out what to do with their students during the great solar eclipse. Why? Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week, we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week, we're talking about ways to stay motivated as a new teacher, and we have the author of See Me After Class. This is the book that deals head-on with the challenges that are not necessarily covered in the new teacher training manual. Hey everybody, Nick Ortigo here, and I'm joined with teacher extraordinaire, Lissa Pruitt. Lissa, how you doing?
I'm great.
Excellent. You know, quick question about these rocks. We were talking about these rocks before. You know, everyone's
the kindness rocks.
The kindness rocks, I guess. I'm behind the curb. I was reading We Are Teachers the other day, and I saw that you can, like, maybe paint rocks for your teachers. Like, is that what you do? Like, what do you do with this?
Well, you can paint rocks for anybody, you know, that you intend to brighten their day, or just kind of make it a generic uplifting quote. But I mean, the idea obviously is to paint kindness, spread kindness. You're supposed to place your rock out in a, you know, open area where somebody would happen by it and they can choose to pick it up.
For those of you that don't know, Lissa is also an art teacher, like outside of schools. And so you've been doing this, I guess.
Oh, yes. All summer I've been hosting.
It's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. It's a big deal across the nation. And it's kind of one of those things that is debated of where it started, but across the nation, young and old are finding rocks, painting rocks, sealing them, and then putting them out for others to find. And the communities are making Facebook pages where you can, you know, kind of make a scavenger hunt, give a clue of where this amazing rock is hidden.
Sounds neat.
But yeah, I mean, to paint some to acknowledge teachers would be awesome and put them around the school. That's a great idea. I haven't done that yet.
I had to ask. I just stumbled across that. Hey, before we get into the teacher's lounge, I do want to kind of hit on kind of a heavy topic. And what made me think of it is I was scrolling through some news this morning and I saw this story out of Charlottesville, and I put it on our blog, the Class Dismissed Podcast .com blog, but a bunch of teachers in Charlottesville, Virginia, just a few days after this weekend violence, had to gather. They actually had a convocation already planned, and it was designed before this even violence even happened, and they were just supposed to get together, but the tone of it kind of changed. And there's this really powerful video that we put on the website of these teachers singing Lean On Me together. In fact, I'm going to play just a little clip of that real quick. Obviously, a pretty touching moment out of Charlottesville. That video was posted by a young lady from the community named Rachel Wilson. Looks like she's maybe a freelance photographer or videographer. And she said, you know, so the world sees us for who we really are. So pretty touching moment there. But how do teachers even address this kind of coming out the gate? I know that's a tough question to put on you. Have you seen anything? Do you take it head on, or do you just kind of go and stick with your curriculum?
I don't think they're sticking with their curriculum. I'm sure that there's counselors and support staff that are there kind of having open discussions to try to help with the shock of the situation. And you can't just act like nothing happened. But I do think teachers of youngsters across the nation and middle schoolers and high schoolers, I know that they often use different things that happen across the world that of, you know, acts of violence or whatever, and they do open up a discussion just to kind of try to help teach compassion, to try to help, you know, bridge any gaps or misunderstandings. I mean, we can never explain it all, and it's awful, but I do think there are so many teachers out there that definitely open up positive conversations about this. I'm sure that's what's happening there too.
You know, NPR yesterday posted an article, and it was about the resources for educators to use in the wake of what happened in Charlottesville. I'm going to put that in the show links as well, so if a teacher wants to go and check that out. And it's just full of different resources and ideas, and the most appropriate ways to try to teach this or address it and whatnot. And there was a thing that kind of stood out at me in there. I know a lot of teachers are like the biggest Twitter users I've ever seen. Have you noticed this? Like,
I don't know. I don't use Twitter.
Oh my gosh. They are like power Twitter users. It's news people and then teachers, I think. It's incredible. But anyhow, so I know a lot of folks are on Twitter who probably listen to this podcast, but there was a hashtag going around called Charlottesville Curriculum. So not saying that everything that's put in there is the right thing to do, but it's certainly a place to go and at least get ideas. So if somebody wants to follow that hashtag.
I would find that very helpful if I was trying to have a real discussion about some hot topic that is, you know, tough to talk about. I would love a roadmap of how to navigate.
Certainly, it's tough. So with that said, let's go ahead and jump in the teacher's lounge. Lissa, are you hearing anything?
Yeah, well, I was reading an article about New York and how they're really diving into mastery-based learning, which is similar to what we talked about previously with personalized learning.
And let me stop you there. What you're referring to is the interview we had in episode 12. We talked to a superintendent about personalized education.
Yes. And so mastery-based learning is similar in ways because every child's doing something different. It's really proven excellent for your overachieving students, your gifted students, but also the ones that fall behind. So it's a way to make sure that everybody is being challenged at their own level with, you know, basic things that they feel like you've got to master before you move on. And the catch is you don't move on until you master this.
Wow. Yeah.
So you will, you know, it's digital and children will be given a series of prompts and questions and, you know, resources. And then they, you know, are given kind of a set of skills to see if they mastered it. And if they didn't, then they go back through not the exact same things, but a maybe reformatted way to master a specific skill. You know, in my opinion, I think this would be excellent for some students in math. I would think maybe some of the negative feedback is, does it spiral? And if you don't know what that means, Nick, spiral means like, does it reinforce, like, let's say that they learned positive and negative integers. Well, then 2 months went by. Does it ever go back to that? Does it ever make it fresh? Because
I knew what that meant.
No, you didn't. You were shaking your head. But they do, you know, it's a problem in science and history also, to where they learn something about weather and then, you know, 2 months later, they can't remember anything they learned about, you know, weather.
Clouds. Yeah.
Yeah.
So personalized learning, mastery learning, maybe slightly different, but similar. And we're seeing more and more about this kind of popping up in different pockets of the country. The interview from episode 12, the guy was a superintendent out of Wilder, Idaho. And I think the story you're referring to is coming from New York.
That's right.
And so is this a fad or is this the new way of teaching? What's your thoughts?
Well, I would imagine it's the new way of teaching just because society has moved to such personalized, you know, universities, you can get a complete college degree online, never leave your house. So I do think it's, you know, I do think that the high schools, middle schools, and elementary schools have to try to go that way too, because, you know, going to a university is not an option for everybody as far as physically going to a university, but doing one online would be great. And if you weren't prepared in any way for any sort of online component to learning, then you would be at a disadvantage in your online university. But also, I mean, I feel like that's the thing now. Everybody kind of is doing their own individualized course or, you know, their own ideas of how they want to parent, live, work. And so this meets the needs of children that really need their needs met. You know, not, it's not a, one size fits all thing.
What I like about this is it's forcing students to be personally responsible. Right. You know, it's like you really can't kind of go under the radar. And as the interview we had in episode 12 said, we call it failing forward. You know, students, kids, whatever, they're going to mess up. They're going to not meet the benchmark or the milestone that they're required to meet. And then they're going to have to figure out what they do from there. And I think that's something that you could, in the old days, maybe make it all the way through 12 grades of school and kind of be under the radar and just kind of slide by. But,
absolutely,
you know, it's what you do when you get knocked down. And I do really like that there's some personal responsibility in these styles of teaching.
And also from a teacher standpoint, it's hard to teach a concept to a class of 25 and know that four of them did not master it. But as a teacher of a class of 25, you have to move on. You have to mark that they didn't master that skill, and you have to move on. The whole class has to move on. So if you think about that, every year, that child that probably didn't master that skill probably didn't master it the next year or the next year. And there's truly gaps in learning. And that's what this is supposed to help is, you know, so I would think as a teacher, I would want, you know, a regular setting class with an active teacher mm-hmm. teaching active things to the whole group. But then this be a branch off, maybe a second section of time where they're all isolating skills that they want to move forward on or remediate. That's how I would want to use it if I were a superintendent.
Yes, superintendent. Lisa Pruitt.
That's what I would do. Right. Because I do think it's a great skill. You don't want to leave anybody behind. And this program won't leave anybody behind.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned something earlier. You said, talking about weather and science, and I'm going to be kind of beating a dead horse because we've talked a lot about the eclipse. And we're recording this right before the big eclipse is about to cross the country. And I've been tracking the weather of where I'm going to be to watch it. And forecast is like 10% now, so that's awesome. But there's a debate going on right now. It'll be interesting because most folks are going to be listening to this after the fact. But there's a debate about schools and do they lock the kids in a room and don't let them see the eclipse? Because they're concerned about safety and looking at the sun. Do they cancel school so the kids aren't necessarily their problem, their liability, I guess, is probably the more appropriate term. Or do they embrace it and bring them outside and provide them with protective eyewear and hope that every teacher watches their 35 students and keeps those glasses on when they're staring at the sun?
Yeah, and there's a ton of noise about it. I mean, in the education world and among parents, there's a lot of parents talking about, well, what do I do? You know, should I keep my child home that day? And, you know, I do think, I mean, kudos to the science teacher that says, we're going to all go out and watch this together. Everybody make sure you have your glasses. They have to be this certain type of glasses.
I think if the school provides the glasses, that's, you know, they're the ones verifying, that's even better.
Yeah, well, they're not. Well, I mean, the ones I've heard, they're not.
You can't speak for all of them.
Well, the ones I've heard of are not applying. They're asking the children to bring their own glasses. And there's, you know, lots of talk on Facebook of people saying, does anybody have an extra pair of glasses? But there's also lots of medical stuff being put out there to say, like, hey, watch out. Like, because, you know, even if you glance at it for 30 seconds, that's, you would not normally glance at the sun for 30 seconds because it wouldn't be possible. And so you feel like you're not looking at something harmful when you are. Mm-hmm. And so, and then again, you said the teacher, okay, does she go out there and hope that all of her 25 students kept their glasses on and that their glasses were wonderful? But also, does that mean she doesn't look at the eclipse?
Yeah, because I was about to say.
Like, she's going to be looking at the eclipse.
Yeah, she's going to be the security guy at the Super Bowl looking at the crowd.
Yes.
You know, and that's a little unfair, I guess, for the teacher. So they're probably like, let's just cancel school. I don't know. I mean, it's such, I truly am a believer that this will inspire STEM education and get kids interested in science in all sorts of different ways, anything celestial. And that's a great thing. So I really do applaud the districts that are doing this, and they're going to bring the kids outside. I was reading an article out of Tupelo, Mississippi. The local McDonald's, I guess the guy owns a bunch of franchises around there, he purchased all the glasses for the entire school district.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really nice. And they are going to embrace it, and they're going to go outside. So I applaud them for it. But yeah, there's that liability, and I do understand. You know, at the end of the day, though, shouldn't the parents also, you know, have some responsibility. I mean, I'm sure parents could probably go
they
out there.
They had to sign a permission slip. The ones I know of, they had to sign that they, you know, were providing the appropriate glasses and that they, you know, that the school is not liable should, you know, someone's retina be burned.
Yeah. But so it sounds like to me, you're on the side of caution and you say, don't let them go out there.
Well, no, I'm not saying don't let them go out there. I'm saying me. I do not teach science and I do not get into some of this stuff. I mean, I think it's neat, but I don't know enough to know about it. Plus, I wouldn't know enough about my students to know that every single one of them would 100%, you know, obey the protocol because they don't on a regular basis anyway. So I would think that it would be concerning for a teacher that maybe this is not her area, but everybody's wanting to do it. And so, you know, and then what do you do when you have, you know, 25 kids and two of them don't have the glasses, yeah. You know, then what? Then what do? You just leave them inside. And so it's just, I promote getting excited about science. My son is so excited about it. But I do see where there's a lot of talk because nobody wants to be responsible. And it's hard to be responsible for 25 individuals in a short amount of time when it takes just a few seconds to cause some serious damage. That's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is scary.
Right. No, definitely something you have to watch out for. You said you don't know a lot about it. If you want to learn more and you're listening, episode 6 of the Class Dismissed podcast, we interviewed astronomer Glenn Schneider, and he has seen 33 total solar eclipses. Only two other people in all of history have seen that many, and he's going to be seeing his 34th. And actually, the other two folks will as well. So there'll be three people in the entire world of all time that have seen 34 total eclipses, and he's one of them. Interview episode number 6. Are you about ready for the bright idea?
Yeah.
Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment is the author of See Me After Class, the book that deals head-on with the challenges that are not necessarily covered in the new teacher training manual, Roxana Eldon. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Good, good, good. I'm really excited for you to join us because your book appears to be one of the more genuine teacher advice books on the market.
I hope so.
Okay, good.
I mean, that's definitely what I was thinking when I wrote it.
Well, and what I love is that you actually admit that this book is not chicken soup for the teacher's soul. You say it's more like hard liquor for the teacher's soul. Why do you say that?
Yes, because after a really bad day, you need something stronger than chicken soup.
Gotcha. And is teaching that tough? I mean, to where, you know, you think you go into it with this idea that you're going to change the world and things maybe aren't that easy?
It can be that tough, and I'll tell you why it can be that tough. As a teacher, you don't come to do an okay job. You come to do a great job. You come with the best intentions, and the worst days are the days that make you feel like you're part of the problem. And every teacher has those days. And I feel like that's the part that is very, very hard to find sources of honesty to talk about, those moments when it's not the kids, it's not the system, it really is you. And how do you deal with that when you came to be part of the solution?
You know, in the next few episodes on this show, we're going to be talking about teacher retention and teacher shortages just kind of around the country, mm-hmm. which seems to be a pretty big problem just around the United States, if not the world. I know you do a chapter in your book on maintaining and regaining your sanity. And you kind of open up that chapter talking about your first year of teaching. And you said you used to open up a cabinet and pretend you were looking for something and you'd silently be mouthing curse words into the cabinet out of frustration. Was it really that crazy that first year?
It was. And again, it was not necessarily the kids, although please don't get me wrong, the kids could be extremely frustrating. I don't like to be one of those teachers who are like, no, the kids are great. It's just everything else. I mean, the kids themselves can be very frustrating. But part of the issue my first year was that I was learning through trial and error in front of this class full of kids who I was there to do my best for. And so those were some of my hardest moments. And another issue that I was having my first year was a tremendous lack of sleep, which is something that I think new teachers are accidentally encouraged to do, because the push for new teachers is, you have to give these kids your best. If you give up for even a second, you're just like all those other terrible veteran teachers who you came to be better than. And what you realize is humans are not meant to function, you know, going full force all the time. So in your effort to do your best for the kids, you often end up undermining your own efforts by coming into school exhausted every day. So that was another thing that I was constantly dealing with. And if I could go back and talk to my old self, that would be the number one thing I would tell her, which is just get to sleep by 9:45. Don't stay up planning that lesson to, you know, to perfection. Don't stay up cutting, you know, paper pepperonis out for the fraction pizza lesson because drawing them, drawing the circles on isn't enough effort. I mean, take some shortcuts so you can go to bed.
It sounds like, you know, you definitely wrote this book because you probably felt like maybe the training, the professional development or the training in, at a university didn't really kind of get into some of the nitty gritty and the realistic problems or challenges that you may have as a teacher. You know, reflecting on your time as a teacher, what story jumps out in your mind of where you had this aha realization moment about the challenges of teaching?
Well, the three things that I really couldn't find as a new teacher were humor, honesty, and practical advice. When I really needed someone to acknowledge certain experiences, they kind of rerouted and redirected me back to my training. So I would say, you know, I haven't been maybe as consistent as I should have been in my class. And now the kids have figured out the loopholes in my classroom management system, which, by the way, I probably wouldn't have even put it in those terms because that requires some experience to recognize. Mm-hmm. But the advice I would get would often just be like, well, it's very important to be consistent in your classroom management. And I already knew that. The issue was either I had already done it wrong and I needed a way to walk it back, or certain pieces of advice really weren't working in my classroom. You know, I needed someone to say, well, actually, you know, sometimes positive reinforcement doesn't work. And here's what you do then.
You talk about a phase that you call the disillusionment phase, which typically takes place, I guess, in, is it September and October or October, November, somewhere in that
October,
area.
November. So first of all, I should say I did not make up the term disillusionment phase.
Okay.
That comes from the New Teacher Center. And they did a study that I actually did know about my first year, and I found it tremendously helpful. You can basically divide the school year by months, and almost every new teacher is feeling the same way as every other new teacher in each of those months. So the toughest part of the year usually falls around October and November. And what happens is in August and September, you're planning. It's not that you think things are going to go great, but you have no idea what's going to go wrong. So you're very nervous, but you're also very energized. You're running on adrenaline. Mm-hmm. Then you get in front of the kids. You make a few mistakes, but you're still making an effort to constantly improve and to, I guess, climb out of any holes that you've dug for yourself. During all that time, you're probably sleep deprived. And during all that time, you are being told by everybody that your first year either makes you or breaks you, which is a terrifying piece of advice, and I don't think it's true. And then in October, sometime in October, you hit this wall where you've had 6 weeks of sleep deprivation and 6 weeks of messing up on something that everyone is telling you is the most important job in the world, mm-hmm. that you believe is the most important job in the world, and that supposedly this year is going to make you or break you. And then somewhere in that October, November period where you're really, really counting down to Thanksgiving, something will happen that just makes you feel like the most terrible teacher.
Like what?
In my case, it was that I ruined Halloween for my kids. I was so tired that I forgot that it was Halloween. Mm-hmm. And the kids were off the wall. They had probably eaten candy for breakfast. They were certainly expecting me to do something. I taught fourth grade. They were certainly expecting me to do something to celebrate Halloween. And I was just so tired that I completely forgot it was Halloween. They were acting up, and I kept adding math problems to their homework. And that is something, even then, I knew that you're never supposed to give homework as punishment because that makes kids hate learning.
Right.
So even as I'm doing it, I just know that I'm making kids hate learning. I also know that my worst students are not going to do the homework because they didn't do the homework. And those were the students acting up. So I was really just punishing my best students, making them hate learning. And at the very end of the day, when I dismiss everybody, and I had given these kids like 70 math problems for their homework, I run into another teacher and she's carrying a plastic pumpkin full of candy. And she says, "So what did you do for Halloween?" And I just barely made it back to my classroom. And then when I got in my car, I had to pull over into a Burger King parking lot and I cried for a few hours. I couldn't get back on the road. It was even now I still get emotional thinking about that day.
Yeah, that's a tough moment, I'm sure. And so mm-hmm. you're acknowledging that this happens and that this is common, like teachers go through this usually around this time period. So what do you mm-hmm. do about it now that you've acknowledged it?
Knowing it's coming helps. Knowing why it's happening helps. And then I would just say, don't even fight it. You know, do what you need to do. Cry it out in your car. Again, go to sleep, because you are almost definitely exhausted when this happens. Understand that this is not the moment that decides who you are as a teacher. Forget all those people telling you the first year makes you or breaks you. That's just something that rhymes. So it's been passed down.
Right.
There are plenty of teachers who have had terrible first years and gone on to be successful. And you might even still have a good year this year. You can't even judge your year by the, you know, time between Halloween and Thanksgiving.
What's the feedback you've received on the book?
My favorite comments are people who say they were thinking of quitting and this book pulled them back and now they're happy as teachers.
I looked on Amazon and your book does very well. It looks like you have a lot of solid reviews there. I think you're pulling close to 5 stars on there. And we're not mm-hmm. just talking about one or two friends who are writing nice things about the book. And that's got to be pretty rewarding for you to see that, huh?
It is. It is. And I get emails, and I especially get emails around the time I'm talking about, which is which is the disillusionment phase. I put together an email series for teachers during this time, which I call the Disillusionment Power Pack. Teachers can sign up. It's 1 month of emails, and it goes out every couple days where I took pictures of my journal from my first year of teaching. Mm-hmm. And I explain what was going on in my head when I wrote, "I just feel like all my students hate me," or whatever it was. And what I know now that would have helped me get through it if I knew it back then.
So you also have a chapter in your book, you call it the Teacher's Lounge chapter, and you talk about some of the advice you were given as a first-year teacher, and that was to kind of stay out of the Teacher's Lounge. What do you think of that advice?
I followed it my first year, and I wished I hadn't. People told me that it would be full of negative teachers. It would be full of teachers who are gossiping. And also, it would open you up to gossip. And I was also told the same thing about attending happy hour with my colleagues. And I followed it, and I wished I hadn't. There is some truth to the fact that there will be a collecting place for the most negative teachers at your school. It may not be in the actual teacher's lounge. That's more of an abstract concept.
Yeah, I'm not sure schools even have teacher's lounges anymore, but they must have somewhere where they congregate.
Yeah, it's often the actual teacher's lounge is often just like a closet with a microwave and a plant.
Sounds glamorous.
But, oh, no, you have no idea. I mean, it's easy to advise people to stay away from negative teachers. And I think there are reasons for that that don't need to be explained. You don't want to be around someone who's complaining all the time. But you also may want to avoid people who never complain and who are always upbeat and positive, especially if they tend to answer anything negative you say with something like, "Well, that would never happen in my class." Because what you're talking to is not an upbeat person. You're talking to a one-upper. And that, in my own personal experience, that can make me feel worse than somebody who acknowledges that there's a problem and, yeah, maybe complains a little bit. But what I always advise teachers is that complaining about work is like drinking. So you don't want to do it too much. You don't want to do it first thing in the morning. You don't want to do it all day long. And you don't want to do it in the wrong company, because it can make you look bad and it can leave you with regrets.
Right. Everything in moderation, right?
Everything in moderation. So find a good, just like you'd find just a couple of good drinking buddies that have the same attitude toward drinking as you do. find a couple of good complaining buddies who hopefully can complain for a little while and then rein it in and end on something productive.
What's your advice to a new teacher to try and keep positive going through the school year?
You certainly want to keep a growth mindset, which is something developed by psychologist Carol Dweck, which is basically says that if you believe that through effort and reflection you can consistently improve, you will improve much more than someone who believes that you're either good at something or bad at something. And that's also why I have such a problem with the advice that the first year of teaching makes you or breaks you. No, it doesn't. It's what you do with the worst moments of your first year of teaching.
All right, Roxana Eldon, if someone wants to keep up with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yes, they should go to my website, roxanaeldon.com.
Excellent. Well, again, the book is called See Me After Class, and we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. Hopefully your book can help some teachers when maybe they're kind of in those down moments in their years of teaching, and this can maybe lift them up a little bit. I'm assuming that's the goal, right?
I hope so, yes. And for the disillusionment phase especially, you'll find something on my website that will link you to those 30 days of emails that are meant to help you through your roughest month of the year. And you'll know when that is. It's called the Disillusionment Power Pack.
Are you ready for our pop quiz?
I hope so.
All right. So if students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should it be?
Reading.
Why's that?
Because if you read, you can teach yourself everything else. And also I'm an English teacher, so I'm biased toward reading.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
That's probably a complicated answer, but I'm going to go with it's okay to be bored sometimes.
Yes.
And maybe also that there can be a lot of rejection on the way to success and a lot of no's on the way to a yes.
That's good advice. What does every child deserve?
A fair start.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
I would say that depends on the teachers, the individual teachers. However, a challenge that I don't think gets enough attention is how tough it can be for teachers to maintain the energy they need to do their regular job while also following the political discussions about teaching, which are almost always dominated by non-teachers who have time to be part of these discussions. And it can be very draining for a teacher to live the reality of your job while also listening to somebody who did not get up at 5 a.m. talk about your job and miss certain nuances that only a teacher can provide.
And I know you specifically categorize those non-teachers in your book. You talk about those, right?
Yes. So you have, well, you definitely have your Hollywood version of what a good teacher is and what a bad teacher is. Good teachers are always very good looking in Hollywood movies, always very young, among other things. And then you have the various politicians and various TV people whose job is to have opinions on things. They're not necessarily education experts. And then you have people who come from education think tanks and certain parts of industry where they have a specific issue that they would like to advance. But often what's missing is a sense that teachers have a finite amount of time and energy. And if you want them to spend it on something new, then you are taking it away from somewhere else. And I've always found that what's missing from the discussion is, what do you want teachers to not do in order for them to do this new thing?
What's the best gift to give an educator?
A Starbucks gift card.
What career path would you have taken if you couldn't be in education?
I would say something with writing or general communication.
What teacher changed your life?
That's always a tough one for me because I don't have that one teacher who lit the flame so much as I had a lot of teachers, luckily enough, who poured that gasoline on the ground so that the flame could spark up when it was ready to. So I did have a teacher who assigned us, it was actually a student teacher who assigned us to keep a dream journal. And I can trace the moment that I started becoming a writer to the moment I started carrying that composition book called The Dream Journal in my backpack and just writing in it whenever I had a thought. But that guy wasn't really the person who started me on the line to being a writer. That probably happened with the teacher who first taught me to read, the teachers who taught me phonics, the teachers who taught me grammar, and a whole bunch of other boring stuff that led to the skill set where I could write without being frustrated.
Do you buy your school lunch or bring your own?
Bring it and keep it in a mini fridge behind my desk that I'm not really supposed to have.
All right. And last question, pen or pencil?
Pen.
Excellent. Roxana Eldon, again, we appreciate you taking the time to visit with us. Again, the book is called See Me After Class, and you can catch up with her on her website, RoxanaEldon.com. Thanks again.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for episode 13 of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. If you like what you heard today, please be sure and subscribe to the show. And plus, we'd love it if you leave us a 5-star review. Those are what keep us going. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismissed. On behalf of School Status and Lissa, representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortigo, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class Dismissed.